welcome to the Nashville Story. I'm Stuart Deming.
And I'm Aaron Pennington.
And joining us today is Pete Gibson, the owner of Pride and Glory Tattoo Shop. That may sound familiar if you've been keeping up with the Nashville bombing. He is the owner of Pride and Glory Tattoo, and his shop was heavily affected during the Nashville bombing.
So Pete is going to talk with us today about what that experience was like waking up on Christmas Day. He's also going to take us a little bit through what that area is like, what the aftermath was, and some of his favorite things around Nashville as well. So thank you, Pete, so much for joining us today here on The Nashville Story.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Okay, so Pete, a little bit before we get into Christmas Day and the bombing, can you give us a little bit of background on Pride and Glory Tattoo? Obviously, we know it's located along 2nd Avenue, but can you give us a little history of the tattoo shop and its proximity to everything on 2nd Avenue?
Yeah. Pride and Glory Tattoos, P&G Tattoos. My name is Peter Gibson, so P&G Tattoos, Pride and Glory, kind of
very cool.
Just all came together full circle, you know, if you really get down to it. I started in 2014 there. Started from the ground up, started with nothing on the walls. The building's window, my front window was broke, you know, started with no stencil machine, no tattoo supplies that like needed to run a fluent shop. Just kind of opened it up and was like, what the hell am I doing? Like, you know, is this a smart choice? And the same artist that I hired first, Evan Biggs, he's still with me today. So it's pretty cool. And we started from the ground up in 2014. I was 24 years old and not knowing much about anything going on in business, you know, like, I mean, you know, just the little background stuff that you get taught in school, which is who knows, like it's never hands on. And I just started 2014 from the ground up, like I said, and just kept grinding and grinding, and then really started to get rolling about mid 16. And it's just been a great time, and it's been every year, every month. We've been, you know, pre-COVID, obviously, it's been growing and just increasing as the city increases. And, you know, I just love it. It's home. It's my heart. And it's awesome. And, but, the location from the bomb down there, we were, I was the closest building besides the AT&T building that was maybe the target. I don't know, you know, who knows what really he was doing.
Right.
But my front door was the closest besides the AT&T building to the bomb, directly across the street, 41 feet. Ground zero, pretty much.
Wow. Well, that's crazy. Can we go back a little bit in time? What made you choose putting a location on 2nd Avenue?
To be honest with you, I went to MTSU, Middle Tennessee State, out here, out of high school for a little bit, before I transferred back to a school called Washburn in Kansas. And I ended up moving back down here anyway. Long story. I used to work at, I used to barb at a bar on Broadway. I was actually 19 years old. They thought I was older. They thought I was like 21, 22, called Whiskey Bent Saloon. It was pretty funny. I mean, and you know, I was just like, kind of like a little bitch boy there. It was right when, Whiskey Bent opened, and, I was working at the boot store, also being like a little employee running up and down the stairs, collecting, you know, buy one, get two free boots for people.
Yeah.
The building, the guys that owned the bar down there, their office was located in the building that the tattoo shop's in.
Uh-huh.
So when I would have to make like cash drops and stuff like that for the, you know, 'cause they trusted me, and, you know, I just worked my ass off. You know, I had no say over anybody. I was completely just, you know, just the youngster in it all. And, they would trust me enough to run their cash drops up to the 174 building, which is, you know, my tattoo shop was 172. Kind of got to know the building owner and the people that worked around it through that a little bit. And, and just kind of blossomed from there. Stayed in touch with those people, as I went back to Kansas to go to school for a little bit. And then, I decided, screw it, I'm leaving this place, and I'm moving back to Nashville, and I moved back down here and started this journey. That was like early 2014.
Wow, that's incredible. We'll definitely talk a little bit about all those transitions and stuff, because I think it's really cool to hear all those perspectives of that. But on Christmas Day, obviously, you said you were, besides the AT&T building, one of the closest, the closest shop in the front, closest front door to that RV. Obviously, probably anybody listening to this podcast has seen, probably an angle or two of the explosion, the blast, and kind of know a little bit behind it. I'm curious to hear the first time that you heard about what was going on and what that experience was like.
Oh man, it was Christmas morning was like none other. It's all such a blur, but it's so clear. Again, if that makes any sense at all, it's just, I was laying in bed we had family in town. My fiance's family, they're from Nebraska, and they were in town. We had a full house. And I just recently moved outside the city. I have a kid now. You know, we had a little baby in April, and we moved outside. You know, just life choice to move outside from Printer's Alley. That's where I have a condo down there. And I was laying in bed, and I heard all the couple kids running around. I heard commotion everywhere in the house. Just Christmas morning type noise.
Sure.
And my fiance wakes me up, and I just feel like it was 30 seconds before she said anything to me. Like I could hear everything going on in the house. Like it just sounds like an awesome Christmas morning. I figured she was waking me up to, hey, I know it's 7 o'clock, but I think it's, we should wake up to open presents or something,
yeah.
So, I feel like it was just, like a minute, 30 seconds to a minute long, just like a pause before she said anything to me, but it wasn't, she just said, something bad happened. I think you should get up and you should go downtown. There's an explosion. And I just didn't know what to take of that. First thing that comes to mind is there's a lot of grills and restaurants next to me. I thought maybe kitchen explosion or like a propane tank or, I didn't really register to me what she meant by like, hey, there's an explosion. And I don't really think she knew what it meant. It was very early. That was within under 40 minutes of when it happened.
Right.
So this was right around like 7:05 AM. The blast was like at 6:32 or something. So I looked at my phone. I had notifications, emails, my phone. I didn't even unlock my phone. I just saw all the home screen, all my stuff. Dude, it was crazy. And I was just like, yeah, this is not good. I threw on some sweatpants, threw on a Titan sweatshirt and, flip-flops, and I just jumped in the car and I sped downtown, which is, I'm out in Mount Juliet, so it's about, it took me like 20 minutes to get down there.
Jeez.
I tried to get down and got blocked by cops. One cop would kind of let me through a little bit, knowing that it was like everything was fresh to everybody.
So yeah.
Nobody knew, so like even the cops were like, nobody really knew anything. They just knew I couldn't get there, and I just saw the smoke. And I know that street second, like the back of my hand. And I just, I saw where the smoke was coming from. Oh. And I just knew, shit, dude, this is not good. Because I also heard the address, 166 is where they said it was parked in front of. But, knowing that street so well, I knew in front of 166 was an illegal parking spot. It was a police parking spot. So there's not going to be something that's able to sit there for 5 to 6 hours without getting told to move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I knew the next legal spot was right in front of mine, 172.
Oh, gosh.
And that's when I just realized what's the damn, I didn't know what to think. I just didn't know what to ask. I was just like, shit, damn. Like, I don't know what to do. And then I tried to circle around downtown for a couple of hours and ended up just going back home. And man, it was a wild day. It was a Christmas that I'll never forget. That's for sure.
That is crazy. Were you able to get security footage from your store? I think I saw security footage from your store.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of footage from the outside. There's body cam footage from the police officer that walked right by the shop with the RV in front of the shop within minutes. I'm talking like he took a right, you know, the Hooters is about 50 yards up the street from me.
Okay.
He took a right by Hooters onto Church Street and it exploded. Like if you watch the police body cam footage,
yep,
you'll see him pass the tattoo shop and the RV is right on the left. And then he took that turn, thank God, because if he didn't take that turn, there's no, I mean, it could have been bad, you know, but yeah, he took that turn and it went off. It's wild. But the, yeah, there's a little bit of footage from in front. All my footage from inside the shop is on my like hard drive and stuff on my computer. So, and I haven't been able to get anything. Like I'm one of the only businesses that hasn't been able to recover anything due to structural damage and just a nest of timber. Yeah. It's just, I tried today. I was down there today and tried, and all I got was a, I literally had thousands and thousands of paintings in that thing. And I got half of a koi fish and two bricks is what I got.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Wow.
Dude. Yeah. Insane.
When was the first time that you were able to make any kind of assessment of the damage to your shop? Was it, you know, seeing either news helicopters? Could you see your shop via any of those shots? Or how did you end up finding out? Because I'm sure you were still worried about, okay, did this, how bad this did this affect my shop? When were you able to see what the damage actually was, either via a news thing or your own footage?
You know, to see it, it was a couple hours within, like, you know, just getting some intel from like ops and stuff like that. Yeah. That kind of, but the first time I felt that it was bad is, about 10, 15 minutes after I came downtown, I was in my car and I, it's not every day. Like a cop has a tear in his eye and he gives you a hug and said, it's not good. And that's when I really knew, like, this is not just a propane tank. This is not like a, this is not a grill fire. This is, you know, this isn't like a, you know, this isn't a Hooters girl, like caught the dressing room on fire type shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this is an explosion. Like, and it was right in front of my business and this is not good. But the first time I really saw it was probably when I got back home and I started to get a drone footage. And like helicopter footage, like they were saying, or like you were saying that, and then again, like I can just, like I keep preaching, like I know that building, like the back of my hand, because I really do. Like that was our, like, I mean, we knew every part of that building. We knew every part of that street, every part of First Avenue. Like it was just, I lived in Printer's Alley. I lived a block away, you know, it's just, I knew it every day.
Yeah.
So when I started to see footage of not exactly the direct, like front of the shop, but I started to see like, just footage of the street and how damaged stuff was. And once I found out where the RV was, I just, it was one of those things. I really didn't even want to see it because it was just everybody, I think the FBI and cops had told me like, yeah, it's pretty much gone right now, you know? So, and that's still to this day, it's pretty much how it's been told to me. Like, hey, there's nothing we can do right now. It's gone. And so, like I said, like I got two bricks and a half a picture of a koi fish. So,
jeez.
I assume that building that you were in is one of the buildings that they're going to most likely demolish and condemn out of like the seven buildings, correct?
Yeah, man. I, you know, I don't want to like say anything that like I don't know, but I've heard that, yeah, that's definitely my spot's getting bulldozed. I mean, getting a restart. And I'd imagine there's a lot more, a little more than they think, I'd say, to just for how old those buildings are already having problems, you know, structurally. And it's just after this, you know, just horrible. Everything's kind of falling apart. So there's a lot of places that are going to get probably torn down.
Were you able to quickly connect with other owners of the buildings in that area as this was happening? I was about to say, if there's anybody who probably knew anything, it might've been the other business owner. So what were the kind of the reactions and the reach out from other business owners in that area as you were trying to figure all of that out?
Man, so we have a neighbor. She owns the $10 store and the Ensemble Boutique, which is right to the north of my shop, which is hers is 176 and I'm 172. So
gotcha.
Right. I mean, I'm right by him. Her name's Sandy and her husband's name's Jeff. They're really good people. She reached out to me. You know, she was hysterical. I really don't remember what the conversation was about. I just remember like, what? Like, you know, just not even like, I just remember her being hysterical. And then actually not long after that, my landlord, the building owner, he actually has an apartment right beside Hooters there.
Oh, wow.
And he was in it. He was with his four kids and his wife. They were up from Tampa, Florida. He was in it during, like, when it happened. He was wrapping gifts upstairs.
He's the guy with the beard, right? The big white beard?
No. He's a very clean-cut business guy, probably mid-40s. You don't see him much. He's kind of a, you know, sticks to himself a little bit. But he was at his condo over Christmas. He has a third floor part of the he owns, like, there's, like, 10 condos in this little, it's called the Quarters. It's right by, like, the liquor store on 2nd there.
Gotcha.
And he owns, you know, all of them, rents them all out, whatever. But he has two of them that he like permanently stays in. I don't know what for, but there's one on the third floor. There's one on the first floor.
And he was in it while was he able to evacuate or was he in it when the bomb went off?
So yeah, he was in it when he was upstairs on the third floor in his apartment, wrapping gifts for his kids and his wife that were on the first floor. You know, Santa was coming and, you know, he's wrapping gifts like 4:30 AM. He got a knock on the door. Hey, you got to get out of here by police. I don't know what time. I'm not sure. I was just telling his story, like what he told me. And like I said, we're all like kind of hysterical and like, it's just all kind of a blur, but, he was telling me he was wrapping gifts and he got evacuated. They got evacuated, you know, within probably an hour of it going off or 30 minutes of it going. I don't remember what he said, but it wasn't too long before it went off and everybody was safe. Everybody was evacuated. Thank God. But, he lost all of his Christmas gifts. I remember him telling me that.
Yeah.
Ended up having to buy Walgreens Pokemon cards or something.
Wow.
Which is completely, you know, nothing to do with the story, but yeah, that's what I remember from him calling me that morning.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy.
I think it's really interesting to hear all these stories and, you know, it was the weirdest thing about this, I think, in my opinion, is that there was just so much unknown, even as the story developed. Like, you know, we found out it was an RV, but there were still unknown. There were some voices that were heard, but that was still unknown. There were some warnings that were given, but, you know, there were still a lot of unknowns with that. And then the motives still unknown. This just seemed like a series of events where unknowns were still kind of piling up on that. How was that for you? I can't imagine for you. I know for everybody else who lives in Nashville and the area, you know, it's just hard to comprehend all of the unknowns to try to figure out, because that's what we do. We try to figure out what happened and why. What was it like for you, who had a lot more stake in that area, to try to continue and comprehend what was going on, even as there were developments, all the unknowns just kept piling up?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like, it still in my mind is I just find myself asking myself every day, why? Like, what? Like, just why? You know, the motive, just I keep asking the FBI and the cops, like, hey, have they found a motive yet? You know, like, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, but I don't really give a shit. Like, they keep telling me, like, no, nothing yet. And I'm like, so you're telling me, like, someone can get, like, busted their door in while they're smoking weed, but we can't figure out, like, how this guy brought a bomb down on set. I mean, National PD is awesome. They're all great. And I'm nothing against them. Everybody has done their job. But it's just like, this guy was really this elusive and he just did that. Like, it's mind blowing. It's completely mind blowing to me. And I just keep asking myself why, like, why was it parked right in front of my, like, not in a selfish way or anything, but why me, you know, like, why right in front of mine? Like, out of, you know, arguably the biggest domestic explosion in U.S. history.
Yep.
Over like Boston and over like, the Olympics in 96 and possibly even over like the OKC bombing, which you know, we didn't lose any lives, thank gosh. But like, why me? Like, why the shop? Why was it within, you know, like feet wise, we were the closest to the blast. Like, I don't, it's just weird. Everything, like I don't have an answer. You know, I just, it's just bizarre and unreal, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's like still a nightmare. I'm like waiting to like wake up from even 2 weeks later. Crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's still hard to comprehend. It's one of those things, and I don't know if you felt the same way, but you know, we've up until then, we as in Nashville have been very lucky and fortunate as a up and coming city to not have to deal with, you know, even though it's not classified as this, like everybody is kind of on the same page mentally, but to have some kind of terrorist type event in Nashville, it's one of those things where you really don't think it's going to happen until it does. I don't know if you're kind of still feeling that as well, and that's kind of why it feels like a dream, is because we didn't really expect it to happen.
Man, it's to say, yeah, don't ever expect this to happen. Like when all the protests were going on a few months ago, you know, you don't, I guess, you know, 6 months ago, whenever all the protests were going on down here.
Right.
You know, we were staying the night at the shop trying to protect our window from getting broke. You know what I mean? And that was something you don't expect to happen. Like seeing a bunch of people lighting the street on fire with baseball bats. And like, you know, there was one night it got really bad down here. Everything else was really peaceful. But there's one night where, you know, trash cans are getting lit on fire. It was like it looked like a movie scene. And you know, yeah, we were there just watching it. And that's just something you don't think is going to happen. And that is on a whole different level, way lower tier level of a bombing happening. And it's just no words. There's no words for it. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever be able to have the words on like trying to explain like the unawareness I had of this happening. Like it's just something you don't think is going to happen at all.
When was the first time you were available to go to see the tattoo shop?
The first time. It was probably, let's say, Friday. It was about a week ago today. I got to go down there and put on a hard hat with some engineers and some fire department. You know, they were like, hey, what ways do you know to get in the shop? So I was like, I know this way, this way, this way. Let's go through this basement door first. We tried to go through there. We got pulled.
Wow.
Let's go through this courtyard here. We go through this courtyard here and try to go up the stairwell here. We got blocked. I mean, it's just thousands of pounds of timber and stuff, just closing the stairways off. And so then I was like, let's go this way, and blocked. You know, we tried three or four different ways, and just, you know, the engineer ended up calling as we were in the dead middle of the building, you know, as bricks were still falling while we're walking through.
Jeez.
And they just called it and were like, hey, I'm sorry, we can't get up here. It's just structurally, we can't risk our lives, your life. And I was like, I understand. But we were so close, like, I mean, so close to getting up to the shop, and just complete dead end.
Wow.
All the time. So I still haven't been able to get, I've gotten to the, on Second Avenue entrance, I've gotten probably within 25 yards of it, but it's still a red tape zone, which means like it's still just completely unsafe. So
I'm curious because of it, the historical status of the buildings, of the area. Obviously you're still in the very, I mean, it's been
2 weeks
and you're still in the very early stages of just the observance of the damage. I'm curious as what the talk has been like with, you know, obviously some buildings are not going to be able to make it, but what's been the talk that you've heard about how to go about that because of the historical nature of the area?
So I, you know, at this point, I'm always like a very giving, like, you know, I always put myself last, but at this point, I'm just kind of like trying to figure out what my crew and myself and my shop is gonna do next.
Yeah.
So from what I've heard on my spot, you know, I'm a pretty realistic person. It's not, it's gone. you know, so I've already been making steps forward downtown with finding a new location. And I'm going to take this as a positive and make it a step forward for Pride and Glory. And we're going to try to make it a even better shop now. And like I said, I'm in the works of pinpointing a location and getting it all down and just really moving forward with this.
My guess is this is probably not the first time you've had to make adjustments for the shop, and COVID is the thing that really comes to mind that has been a big adjuster for business owners in the year of 2020. And obviously a lot of other businesses went through stuff like this with the tornado. So, I mean, unfortunately, Nashville has just been in a very weird pattern of having businesses having to make a lot of very aggressive adjustments. What kind of adjustments did you have to make during COVID? I'm curious to see what that effect was like during there, and then the lead up to this, even though we weren't out of the COVID stuff yet. What was that adjustment like at the beginning of all of the COVID stuff leading up to kind of the Christmas Day time?
Man, this whole year has been absolutely the craziest roller coaster you could ever imagine. Starting off with the tornadoes, you know, having buddies and friends that work in East Nashville and in Germantown where, you know, just live, and it's just devastating, you know, to start off the year as a big sports fan, Kobe Bryant dying. I mean,
yeah.
And then COVID coming in and shutting down. I was closed for a little over 3 months.
Wow.
Dude, it was, you know, and it felt like you were just back square one in your whole business routine. You know, you're having to do, luckily, you know, the guys that work at the shop, we're all like brothers. We're all like such close knit, like a family.
Yeah.
So we were coming up with like painting. We were doing like custom paintings and like selling them. And then we were doing like raffles for like big paintings and stuff like that, which we have an outpour of support. Like our clientele is awesome. We just try to really treat people how we want to be treated. And all this whole year has been a true testament of that, because we've had so much support. And it's just been, that got us through COVID for a little, you know, the 3 months of being in COVID, the raffles and just the selling, the paintings, and just doing stuff like that while we couldn't tattoo. We may or might not have been tattooing each other, like, you know what I mean? But just to keep our hands warm. But, you know, we just couldn't tattoo anybody. And so it was just, it's been such a weird year. And we start to finally get, you know, this fall was like one of our busiest falls, because all of the people who made their vacations during the summer, they canceled those vacations and rescheduled them to fall and winter.
Yeah.
You know, to come to Nashville. So we had a really busy fall, and like the start of the winter was moving forward. It was looking great. And then you just get punched, you know, right in the gut again with this, and everything's taken away in 2 seconds after you fight for a whole year to keep it. You know, it's just, it's crazy, man. It's unreal. This year has just been a learning experience, to say the least.
Yeah. Man, it's so rough to hear. One of the biggest issues with this Nashville bombing, and even with COVID, is issues with insurance. If the FBI classified this as domestic terrorism, you would not be able most likely to get insurance unless you had an insurance policy for terrorism. So what's your insurance battle been like this entire year with COVID-19 first, and then with this Nashville bombing?
Jesus, man. It's, you know, when it comes to insurances, like business insurance, health insurance, home insurance, anything, I am not good at that stuff, you know, and it's already a foreign language. So now I have like a couple of attorneys like running over the insurance stuff, and it's just all a really fuzzy gray line right now, to be honest with you. You know, it's not a water leak. It's not, you know, your window, my window didn't get busted out. It's just like the whole building's gone. So insurance companies are trying to, we're waiting to hear. Hopefully next week we'll be able to hear a little more clear when the building owner is getting his attorneys and his insurance stuff going, and then it's trying to trickle down to all the spots that all the small businesses and the restaurants and stuff that were in his building. But right now, I mean, you guys know how insurance companies go. They try to just try to screw you a little bit. You know, here's a shoelace or, you know, something like it's just, you know, it's just a gray line right now. We're hoping for the best, but, you know, preparing for, you know, kind of getting sucker punched again.
Yeah. I saw on your,
it's just, that's a very hard conversation. It's a very hard like topic because right now everything's so fuzzy still. And, especially since I can't go into my location and see what the damage, you know, see what I have or what I don't have.
Yeah. Like
it's just such a gray line right now. So
I saw on your Instagram account, when you guys kind of, posted the text about what happened. You know, a lot of people reached out, to help and to see what they can do. What was that like? Obviously you had the initial shock of what happened, but what was that like? The kind of support and those kind of phone calls when those started coming in, for people checking on you and everything. What was that like with the support from your community?
Unreal. I mean, it is just a testament how great this like city and like how the tattoo industry is and how your clients are and your friends are in times of like really bad situations. You know what I mean? Like it's an outpouring of love and support times a million. I mean, it's been so great, you know, and I'm not one to really ever like ask for anything or it's hard for me. I like to give. I know that's a very cliche thing, but I'd rather give than to like receive.
Sure.
So like getting all that like outpouring love and support and like, you know, donations and supplies sent. And, you know, even like my baby we have like 8 years of diapers in my house. Like now,
wow.
Like it's just, yeah. I mean, it's just been overwhelming and it's, so much appreciated, and from the bottom of my heart, it's just been like, it's been what's getting me through. You know, it's the support of all my friends, all my family, the tattoo world, all of our clients. It's what's getting us through. It's amazing, truly amazing.
That's incredible to hear. And I know you guys have a GoFundMe, and that will be in our show notes. For people who are listening and want to go and make a contribution. So I'm happy that you guys have had tremendous support because, you know, with the, you know, it could be, I've still heard of people who are in the battle with insurance for the tornado, which was getting close to a year ago. And so I know that could be a never ending battle. So that's amazing to see that, that support right there. I'm interested to hear what you're looking forward to now that we've, you know, I don't know if you've been able to take a single breath of fresh air yet, but I know you said you're in the process of looking for places right now. So you have a little bit of forward thought. And so you're probably looking forward to something. So what is on that horizon for Pride and Glory Tattoo? Is it going to be that next location? What is kind of on that horizon for you?
Man, I think, I'm keeping all the guys positive, and I just think on the horizon for us is greatness. We're going to use this as something that, you know, something that knocked us down, and we're going to live up to that we're going to get back up and be better. You know, we're going to shoot for the stars, you know, the next one as stupid as that sounds, we're all in to like, you know, we're going to do everything better. We're going to make the next shop better. We're going to make it bigger, better, you know, nice. We're just trying to keep our minds positive, one foot in front of the other. And just, I think Pride and Glory is going to be all right. I think we're going to, with all of our drive and all of our ways of going about things, we're going to truly make this next shop great. Like I said, kind of trying to pinpoint locations. We are going to be downtown. So we're going to just keep, you know, putting all our focus into this shop, the new shop that we, when that comes about, and there's just, going to make it great and just try to put that chapter behind us and flip this next chapter over.
Pete, I think it's very it's probably just a coincidence, but that I was very close to probably what I'm guessing where you were in Kansas. I was in probably a very close location to that. I was in Auburn, Kansas, right outside of Topeka. Whenever this happened, and I'm guessing since you said you went to Washburn, you're from not too far away from there.
Yep. I played a little bit of baseball at Washburn University. It was a great time. So I grew up in Kansas City. I grew up in a town right outside of Kansas City called Lansing. My dad was stationed at Fort Leavenworth.
Yep.
So we always lived off base, you know, about 30 minutes from Fort Leavenworth. That's where I grew up. That's my hometown. You know, 20 minutes to a Royals game, 20 minutes to a Chiefs game, right there in Kansas City, Kansas, pretty much. Right by the NASCAR track, you could hear the track going to my parents' house. So that's where I grew up, and that's what I still call, you know, I mean, I've been in Nashville a long time. Nashville's home to me, but my, you know, second home is always where you grew up, and that's Kansas City for me.
So from Kansas City, you came to MTSU. So what brought you to MTSU?
Out of high school, some sports, and went to MTSU, ended up just going to school, you know, and then sitting on my couch one day when I was in Murfreesboro, just doing the college kid thing, not studying, drinking a beer, you know, probably watching something stupid on TV, trying to figure out where I'm going to do tonight, you know. And I got a call from my high school baseball coach. And at this point, I'd been out of high school baseball for 2 years, probably. Mm-hmm. And he called me and said, or 3 years, actually. He called me and said, my little brother was playing baseball at the University of Arkansas. You know, they were a big-time baseball school. And he called me and said, hey, I'd like you to come play baseball at Washburn. And I'm thinking, what, dude? I haven't even swung a baseball bat in life. Like, I can't even, like, I couldn't even go into the batting cage and, like foul tip a ball right now.
Right.
And he told me, he's like, yeah, we talked, and then, long story short, they worked out a deal with my brother leaving a big-time SEC baseball school to come to Washburn.
Wow.
So he wanted to put me, my brother and I always played together in high school, football, baseball, whatever it was. We were always by each other, he knew it was like a thing to get my brother back at Washburn. He said it was just if I was going to go, he knew that there would be a better chance of my brother Parker going.
Hmm.
They wanted Parker so bad. Anyways, I don't know what kind of deal they worked out with him. but I know we had a nice apartment and it was a nice place. And we ended up both moving back. He moved from Arkansas and I moved from MTSU and we started playing at Washburn. And my brother actually became the all-time hit leader at Washburn in 3 years.
Wow.
After that, yeah, it went from deep, you know, big-time Division I school to Division II school. But anyway, I mean, I didn't do shit. You know, I was just there. You know what I mean? But, yeah, we went back and, you know, we played some ball and did the whole Topeka-Washburn thing. It was awesome. You know, got the experience, whole college deal. And one day I just said, man, I can't do this shit. You know, I don't want to do this. I was there for 2 years and I decided in December of 2013 that I'm going to move to Nashville. And so I moved back to Nashville in 14.
One of the
kind
things
of around.
Yeah. You know, I think it'd be interesting to hear, you know, what made you, I mean, make that decision. I've been to Topeka, so I understand a little bit of, you know, what that reason could be. But talk about what you missed about Nashville, even just from that little MTSU experience and the little bit of downtown experience that made you want to come back here. I'm guessing the wind was might have been strong enough in Kansas to blow you over to Nashville. That could have been it.
Yeah, no, man, like when I was at MTSU and I was working down here. I was driving from Murfreesboro all the way down here to work at Whiskey Bent, the bar on Broadway. And working at the boot store on Broadway, you know, I was making that drive from here to Murfreesboro like 40 minutes a day. And man, it was just like I wasn't really like living like the college life when I was at Murfreesboro because all my time was spent either like school work or downtown working. So I just became really close to a lot of musicians down here, a lot of people down here. And Nashville was like, it felt like that's where I needed to be. I was just broke though. You know, I couldn't be in Nashville. I was, you know, just in Murfreesboro, you know. So I just, all my friends were like from Nashville. I had more friends in Nashville than I did in Murfreesboro the whole time I was living in at MTSU. Just cause I was working at two different jobs down here all day for like 4 days a week, you know? And so I just stayed in touch with a lot of friends down here, a lot of which were older than me, you know, a lot of the musicians and bartenders. And cause like I said, I was like 19 years old when I was working in here. So it was like super cool to me. Like, oh, I got all these connections in Nashville. Cause, and then when I would go back to like my roommates in Murfreesboro or like, oh, let's go to Nashville, you know, it was just really cool being such a, like so associated with Nashville. When I was like a young kid living in Murfreesboro at MTSU. And then when I moved back to Topeka, I just missed Nashville, missed the city. I didn't miss Murfreesboro, not at all. You know, Topeka and Murfreesboro. I mean, there's, you can, you know, pretty parallel there. But like, I just miss Nashville, and I just had a lot of friends here, and it's just a lot of opportunity here, and it was fun, you know. Nashville's just fun, like whether it's if you're hungry or you want some beers or you like, you know, you just, you know, want some, like just good time, you know, anything, concerts, any like Titans. I'm a big time Titans guy. I still have season tickets to the Titans. You know, I've had them for years, and I just love Nashville, man. It's just, I've fallen in love with it in the past 10 years. It's insane.
With all that said, why did you want to start a tattoo shop?
That's a good question. A very good question, actually. Man, it goes back to me. It's like working at the boot store, watching all these tourists, working at the bar, listening, you know, never serving anybody, but just listening and like just seeing it all. And I, you know, you notice like one of the biggest things is ID checks. Everybody in this town's like at least 18. You know, mostly 21 and over.
Right.
You know, and I just thought, like, what else could you do in this city besides a bar or like a boot store or like, you know, something like that, like a restaurant? And like, what better way to like put a like, you know, to do something in the city that people would be like more inclined to do, which would be like a tattoo shop, because there's an age limit. You have to be, you know, this, that, and it's just, yeah, I just felt like it fit. And there wasn't, at the time, there wasn't any tattoo shops downtown. I was the only one.
Wow. That's wild. Did you?
Pretty much. There was one on Broadway, but I was pretty much the only one for a while.
I'm guessing it's a great thing. I mean, the tourists already come down, they're ready to spend their money, they're ready to have a good time, they're ready to experience Nashville and probably things they didn't expect. I mean, you have a bunch of bachelorette parties, probably a lot of bachelor parties as well. It sounds like you started during a very thriving time of Nashville. I mean, I'm guessing that's what you experienced, was, you know, a lot of people coming in here, having a good time, and, you know, really adding a tattoo to their experience to Nashville.
Yeah, man, I've watched and I've been like riding the wave of the growth of Nashville for like, you know, seven years now. And I can just remember, man, like it's just, I can remember so many things, like some things I don't even want to say that like a buddy and I started and now it's just taken off. But we like made the blueprint for all of it. Like, for instance, I'll give you one example. A buddy and I started a company called Jacked Up Nashville in 2013. It was a jacked up monster truck with seats in the back to get people to ride around the city.
There you go.
Okay.
You're one of the first ones, right?
We could not get past the state board, like the health department, like all this stuff going to the state, like for seatbelt laws, for our bumper being too high, for steps, for like seatbelt, like all this shit that like you see people breaking all the time now. We had to like have, we were going back and forth, like building this truck, like lowering the bumper, raising the bumper, putting steps on, putting seatbelts in, raising the guards this high, music, this, you know, all this stuff we were doing. And they still denied us. for so long.
Wow.
But I think it really opened the eyes of people, like, or the city, like, hey, this could actually work. So let's do it. So I ended up selling my truck to Joyride, the company Joyride. It still cruises around the city now, and it has Losers Bar and Grill owns it now.
Gotcha.
But that was my truck back in 2013 and 14. So, we could never get it off. We could do it, like, we would ride around, we would pull buddies around, and you know, if a tattoo, like a bachelorette would come in the tattoo shop or something, we would, like, convince them to, you know, get in the back and ride around for free, you know what I mean? But,
yeah,
like, we couldn't get it as business-wise just because it couldn't pass any of the laws because it was so confusing to people.
Mm. Gotcha.
Like when we would bring it in, like, you want people to ride in the back of this while drinking? Like, no way, you know? Like, and now it's on every corner.
Oh, so,
like,
yeah.
Now you have fire trucks.
There's a couple other things. Yeah, that fire truck, tractors, you know, it's just stuff that, you know, it was just unheard of back in the day, and it's really cool, like, seeing all that now, like, kind of like how I want to say, like, a buddy and I, like, we kind of opened the floodgates for it. And there's a couple other things in the city that we kind of did the same, but, you know, that I don't, like, you know, not taking credit or bragging or anything, but it's really cool to be able to ride the wave with Nashville and the city now, because I've truly been a part of watching it all happen. And I just grow before my eyes. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. That's an incredible story and very cool to hear. So you've obviously, you know, been in Nashville enough to know that food is a big part of it. You know, I heard you say that. So what are some of your favorite places to chow down, to, you know, either regular places or special places, anything in between?
Gotcha. Okay. That's a good question. Man, if we're going local, you cannot beat a good beer and a good burger at Crying Wolf over in East Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, unreal, you know. The best salmon in Nashville, I'll go ahead and put it right here on the line. Hard Rock Cafe on Broadway has the best salmon in Nashville.
Really?
Yeah, I swear, you got to try it.
I was not expecting that. I was expecting,
You know what's actually crazy? I just had that today, actually.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
That's awesome.
I went down there today before I met with the police down there on First, and had me a nice salmon. Salmon and some broccoli, and you can't beat the Hard Rock salmon. But no, I really love Bakersfield tacos. Bakersfield. I will tell you the best steakhouse in Nashville is Bourbon Steakhouse on top of the JW Marriott.
Absolutely, yeah, that place is fantastic. Unreal. It's so good. The bacon.
Unreal. From the bacon. Service to the food. The appetizer bacon thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Where they bring you the dish and then they, like, bring up the top and, like, the steam of the bacon's coming. It's fantastic.
Yes, and then, like, they're, like, they bring you the three different types of fries soaked in, like, duck fat and all that. Oh, place is insane.
Did you have you had the bacon at Cane Prime with the cotton?
No, I haven't.
With the cotton candy on top, dude. It is life changing.
Is it? Dang, I haven't. You know, I haven't. I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I haven't ever been to Cane Prime. I normally stick with Deacon's right here on Church Street, or the Bourbon up there on top of the JW.
Yeah, you need to check out Cane Prime.
Yeah. All right, I'll have to do that.
I'm curious with even just because it sounds like you stick within, at least right now, the stuff within that's within proximity of your shop, which I totally understand because there's a lot there. Mm-hmm. One of the little hidden gems that we found out is that Wild Horse Saloon has a pretty good hot chicken sandwich. Mike's Ice Cream is also one of our favorites down in that area. Also there on Second Avenue that you really kind of like to go and check out?
Oh man, we love Frequent Flyers of the Distillery.
Restaurant.
Oh, that mac and cheese.
I know there's one in Midtown. Everything there. I mean, from the pizza to the hot chicken to the mac to the salads, like, it's all great. I mean, and I know there's one in Midtown now, but I think the one on Second was, like, the original, like, or not the original, but the first one, like, kind of down here. And like you said, I kind of stick, unless I'm going, like, taking my fiance out to, like, a nice dinner or Like we kind of go the Midtown or, you know, Germantown or the Gulch or something. But man, I stick down in the district, man. I kind of stick where my home is, and that's just, I'm like a big, I'm a big downtown district guy, Broadway, second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, and I just, I stick around these parts. And so, I think the Stillery on second is, has to be probably, you know, and I, this is aside from Hard Rock Salmon. I'm, I keep telling you guys this, Hard Rock Salmon is insane.
We will be trying it for sure.
Aside from Hard. If you go to Hard Rock, you got to ask for Nixon. Nixon, the server. Nixon, he's been a local down here for 30 years. It's insane. He's a, he's the best. But anyways, Stillery has to be my favorite on second. You know, it's just, golly, it's, they got all sorts of options. They're deviled eggs. It's, yeah, Stillery is legit.
Yeah, all this food talk is making me really hungry. I may have to head to second right now to go.
I know. I'm trying to think where I'm going next.
What is this is a question we like to ask everybody. What is one thing Nashville is missing?
One thing Nashville is missing. That's a great question. You know, and of course, in my mind, I'm saying like a casino or something. But you know, I think, you know, Nashville. Man, it's not missing much, but you know, I think it's missing a professional basketball or a baseball team.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we're hoping for.
Like, it's supposed to lose weight positive, not to get too deep about anything, but yeah, like, you know, it's,
we're hoping for.
I don't know.
I'm pretty confident that within the next 5 years, we'll at least have a for sure idea of when Nashville will be getting one. Cause I'm really, because of the efforts from the baseball kind of commission that's been going up and everybody they have endorsing it, I'm confident that Nashville is going to get a baseball team, and it's not a matter of if, but when, but I think exactly, it'll still be a long time before we did that. I wish that we'd get the Grizzlies, but I don't know if Memphis could take it if we
FedEx
took that
has
from
too
them.
Too much money.
Yeah, I feel like you take the Grizzlies away from Memphis. It's kind of like, oh man, like I don't know.
They have Elvis, Beale Street, and Sun Records, and that's the only thing that they have left.
And FedEx.
Exactly. The giant triangle, the Triangle Bass Pro Shop out there.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
That's it. Yeah. Taking the Grizzlies away from Memphis would be tragic for them. But, you know, I'm saying that as lightly, like, you know, Nashville, there's so much going on in this city. The sports, like the last thing, like, you know, people really think about when they come down here. We got the Preds, which has like a, you know, ultimately like a bigger like fan base than the Titans do. It seems like,
oh yeah.
You know, you know, we got the Sounds, and it's just such a, and I mean, and now we actually, we got the new soccer team, which is awesome. We actually tattooed the general manager, like the head guy of that soccer team. He moved from like Liverpool.
Oh,
we
that's awesome. Him.
Yeah. It's really crazy.
What
super
did he
cool
get?
Guy. Man, he had a bunch of work on his arm, and we kind of added some stuff to it. Man, his name's slipping my, it's something with an, forget his name. I don't know, but he came from Liverpool. He's super, super cool dude. We talk. I don't know too much about soccer, but we, you know, just as a sports fan, it's cool to talk to him and just like hear his story.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool, but it's just, Nashville's awesome, man. It's a great, great city, and it's freaking, there's not much it really needs, but you know, I mean, other than maybe like a transit system, and that's probably the next step, you know what I mean? But I don't, who knows?
Yeah, that's one of those things, is we'll all hope and pray and we'll believe it when we see it kind of thing.
As a local downtown, yeah, it's like hard to want that, because that just means more construction. So
yeah, exactly. Well, Pete, thank you so much for calling in and talking to us about your story, the story of Pride and Glory and everything that it's going through. And again, for everybody listening to this, the link for the GoFundMe will be in our show notes. And Pete, I know you guys will get through this strong, and everybody around you, I know that you guys will get through this. And so we'll be, you know, rooting for you and everything and supporting you. And, we can't wait to hear on an update, later for Pride and Glory, and to see you guys thriving in the near future. We're very excited for that.
man, I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a pleasure, and you guys are awesome. And we'll keep you updated, and we'll just continue to stay natural strong and move forward with all this.
And that was Pete Gibson, the owner of Pride and Glory Tattoo. And, I mean, what an amazing person Pete is, and what an honor to hear his story.
Man, it was just to be able to have, like, that firsthand experience that he, like, is still going through this process, and he still hasn't been able to see his shop yet. That's, like, it's like a heart, like, you're like, wow, man, this is rough. But they're going to recover. We'll definitely keep you guys updated if you guys want to go support them. The GoFundMe page is in our show notes, and make sure to go follow them on social media to stay update with what's happening with all of their tattoo shop.
And if you want to stay up with the latest of Nashville, you can follow us on Instagram, xplr.nash, on there, on YouTube, xplr.nash as well, so you can keep up with the latest of Nashville. We appreciate you guys listening, and we will be back with more Nashville on Monday.